From Ridgeway to York, Connellsville to Pittston, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. spoke to the Pennsylvania Press Club this past week. Our Capitol Watch crew was there. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business to discuss the speech. And the Democrat Party, both nationally and here in Pennsylvania, is moving to the far left as socialist candidates rack up primary election wins. I'll have a town hall commentary on how the party has moved out of the national mainstream. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania's almost invisible U.S. Senate race surfaced this past week in a big way as Vice President Mike Pence campaigned in Philadelphia for GOP nominee Lou Barletta. Barletta, a mid-state congressman, is challenging incumbent U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. for the seat. While in the city of brotherly love, Pence touted President Trump's economic agenda, saying Philadelphia's unemployment rate has fallen to the lowest level ever recorded. He also claimed over 73,000 Pennsylvanians have seen an increase in income since passage of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act last December. Sad news from the world of state government this past week, as State Representative Flo Fabrizio of Erie passed away. The veteran lawmaker died at the age of 73. He had been suffering from pancreatic cancer. Although passionate about his issues, Fabrizio served up respectful debate. He won the admiration and affection of colleagues from both sides of the aisle. Charles Ramsey, a former police chief who now heads the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency, has been tapped to head a new commission on school safety and security. The legislature approved an additional $60 million in the current fiscal year budget to help make students in public schools more safe. Ramsey will lead a 17-member committee that will set standards for assessing the safety and security of school buildings, recommending improvements and helping to fund new safety measures. The Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in Pittsburgh has issued a new report which finds the state's formula and process for determining and administering state funding to the 500 school districts across the Commonwealth is confusing, incredibly complicated, and subject to data limitations. The Institute reports the formula is not as simple as assuming that districts with the greatest gains or losses in enrollment will see the largest or smallest increases in state subsidies. The report recommends development of a new, more simple formula for distributing state funding to school districts. And the Harrisburg-based Commonwealth Foundation has done a deep dive into the recently passed state budget and found over $35 million in earmarks buried in the fiscal code. Earmarks are state funding for special projects, usually tinged with political implications in individual lawmaker districts. Earmarks are frequently used by legislative leadership to nudge legislators into voting for a budget they might otherwise oppose. The Commonwealth Foundation said while some of the earmarks go to worthy causes, they should be subject to a fair and open process, not backroom deal-making. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. thinks the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was a mistake. This while new data from the Heritage Foundation found the average working family in Pennsylvania will pay $1,169 less in federal taxes this year and save over $20,000 during the coming 10 years. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association hosts a Capitol Watch discussion with our new regular panelist, Rebecca Euler, from the National Federation of Independent Business. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. And with me in the studio, the delightful Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, David. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, and you're a permanent addition. We claim you that we had to send that other guy off to wherever he went, but we traded up. So thank you for being part of our Capital Watch family here. So it was earlier, just a few days ago, that you and I were together in Harrisburg and that we attended the PA Press Club luncheon, and that Pennsylvania's senior U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. was there and spoke. And you and I both had a pretty strong reaction to the senator's presence. You want to encapsulate for the audience kind of what that was like?
We did. Senator Casey spent a lot of time talking about the impact of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act on wage earners and on Pennsylvanians generally. And I and several other members of our company at the table kind of felt like we were in an alternate reality at the time, because it seemed like the senator had nothing good to say about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is in direct
contradiction
to a lot of
what people are experiencing.
Yeah, a lot of what we're hearing, especially from our small business owners, who our polls are finding are incredibly excited about the state of the economy right now. They're expanding their businesses, they're hiring employees, they're raising wages, and they're incredibly optimistic about the direction of the economy. And that is in large part due to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So a lot of the sort of bullet points that he went down related to wage stagnation, income inequality, and the pessimism that a lot of people say, a lot of people he indicated are saying that they're very pessimistic about this Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. It just doesn't seem to be the reality of what we're hearing out in the field.
Well, so. Yeah, and again, you know, NFIB representing the people who own independent businesses, privately held companies, and the consumer confidence, the business leader confidence that NFIB is reporting, that the national surveys from the National Association of Manufacturers report the same thing, that confidence on the part of the manufacturing sector is as high as it's ever been, and it's because of bringing the U.S. corporate rate down to just below the average of our closest international competitors, the accelerated depreciation for capital investments so that manufacturers can invest in new gear, new technology, vehicles, all the things that will help them to expand production and inevitably, put out more goods, and that'll require hiring more people.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're seeing in our polling as well. They're very excited about the state of the economy. They're having trouble finding employees because unemployment rate is at record low right now as well. So they're having the one of the barriers that they have to the growth and expansion that they're trying to get going is finding qualified employees. So
and as an inducement to get people off the sidelines, employers are lifting wages. And so we've actually seen that. And again, this is not to pick on Senator Casey as a person too much, but these are just like the general talking points that were coming across by the naysayers. And what's really striking about them is just that they're not true.
A lot of them absolutely are not true. Wage stagnation, let's take that as an example. He used that quite a bit in his talk, and talked quite a bit about how wages have not grown in the past couple of decades, and how he wishes that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act would have been used, or it was a missed opportunity to increase wages and get at wage stagnation and also income inequality.
So through direct government intervention in the decisions that business people make in the workplace.
That's one way to do it, yes. But when I sort of went back and looked at the issue, one thing that I don't think that he's considering, and a lot of the talking points when they talk about wage stagnation don't take into account is that although cash wages have not necessarily improved as much as people would want them to over the past couple of decades, non-wage benefits have gone up exponentially. So, in fact, healthcare, retirement, paid time off, all those things are much more common nowadays, and they constitute up to about 30 to 40% of compensation. So if you include those types of benefits in the wage calculation, that has gone up quite substantially. I think you also have to look at the costs of living as well when you talk about wages and where wages are today. The price of consumer goods has also dropped quite a bit since about the 1970s. What you really have to look at is the time cost of how much something costs.
Yes. How long someone would have to work to purchase a particular item.
Exactly. Yes. So you can't look at it in dollars necessarily, but in time cost is a much more accurate way to look at it. So since 1979, the time cost of a refrigerator fell by 52%. The time cost of a TV by 94%. So wages go farther nowadays in daily life.
Now, one of the things that Senator Casey was going on and on about that sort of stuck in my craw was, you know, he was talking about the tax relief from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Oh, so much of it goes to the 1%, the 1%, harumph, harumph, harumph. Well,
yes.
It struck me that there was no recognition on his part of the difference between what is actual like spendable profit versus the working capital of a privately held business. Like if you're an NFIB member, business owner, you know, your income over expense, like that's not profit. You don't get, I mean, it's not like Scrooge McDuck and his big old vault full of gold coins.
Right.
Like that's what you have to fund your enterprise for the coming year. That's your pool for capital investment and new hiring and anything else that you would want to do inside your company.
Exactly. And like you said, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act contains a lot of incentives to increase investments in your economy, in the economy and in your business. So to not consider that aspect of income per se is kind of disingenuous.
So you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me on the program, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania. And Rebecca, I just have to get on my soapbox here. just for 1 minute. So you know, we heard Senator Casey going off about how awful this is that the people who pay taxes are getting a tax cut. In fact, there has been a lawsuit brought by the attorneys general of New York, New Jersey, and Maryland about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and that it capped the deduction for state and local taxes. So, what has happened over the years that you have had the high tax, big spending, heavily Democrat states raise taxes at the local level? At the state level, to offset, basically to shove some of that burden, a big chunk of that burden, maybe 40%, onto federal taxpayers, so that you have taxpayers from well-governed, limited spending, low tax states paying for subsidizing exactly California and New York and New Jersey and what have you, and so and those states have escalating rates on their taxes. Now, in Pennsylvania, thank goodness that we have the uniformity clause, and so we don't have escalating rates in PA. But in these other states, you know, they go all the way up to tax the high earners, and so these Democrat politicians like Andrew Cuomo are suing to try to restore that the fullness of that deduction, the benefit, 57% of this $650 billion giveaway, more than half of that would go to the 1%. So you're talking about the absolute richest high-end earners in Manhattan and Bel Air getting a tax cut. So it's one more instance where, the rhetoric does not match the reality. And if you're against giving, big giveaways to the 1%, tell Andrew Cuomo to go pound sand. Anyway, enough about that.
That's absolutely true. I think it's kind of ironic, given how much time Senator Casey spent on the 1% and how he believed that the tax bill benefits the 1% so much. But in fact, 90% of taxpayers have gotten a rate cut this year. 90% of taxpayers are paying less money this year in taxes. And that's a good thing for the economy. That's a good thing for jobs, for
private sector investment, which is what is going to yield actual economic growth.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Which will increase tax collections in the future. So
yes.
That's something that we have to keep in mind as well. He also talked a good bit about about health care.
Yep.
And particularly about Medicaid cuts that he said Republicans are proposing to make, which he said amount to about $2 trillion over the next 10 years.
Yes, Medicaid is a very important program that's been very politically sensitive because of the people the program serves. Low-income elderly people, low-income disabled people, and low-income expectant mothers and new mothers. That's been the population served by Medicaid for a very long time.
Primary population.
Yes, except until Obamacare came along and that they expanded Medicaid to include able-bodied people of working age with no dependents. And so what he's talking about here with any restrictions in the program would be again, the people who need it least at the same time when Medicaid expansion is bankrupting the states.
Yes.
It's putting major stress on state budgets, including Pennsylvania's, and that pretending that somehow this is just all for free, it's dangerous nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. And I know you talked about the able-bodied individuals that the Medicaid expansion went to as a result of Obamacare. And I know that there are still waiting lists for disabled children for Medicaid and assistance. So, that, like you said, that's the primary purpose that Medicaid was designed for. And when it was expanded to able-bodied working age individuals, there were trade-offs that had to be made.
With this new population of able-bodied working age adults with no dependents, the feds are reimbursing. They're paying 90%.
Right.
And so from the bureaucrat standpoint, you're going to favor that population because you get the better reimbursement rate out of Washington.
Yes, but the problem is the 90% declines over time, I believe. So as the program expands in the states, you're gonna have problems in the out years when as states struggle to cover the increased costs of the expanded population because the federal reimbursement is going to decline.
Right. And it's unsustainable. I mean,
yes,
again, the whole thing. And what's really the worst part is this: that even as Medicaid as a program is exceptionally expensive for the taxpayers, it is actually a low quality, poor performing program for the people who are served by it.
Right. A lot of folks on Medicaid have problems finding doctors that they can go to in their local communities. That's true.
Of course, it's an election year. I suppose some of this stuff is just standard, but it was really disappointing to have the senator engage in especially a lot of, for him, inflammatory rhetoric. I thought that the way that he spoke about Judge Brett Kavanaugh was just especially apocalyptic.
Yes. I thought it seemed a little more to me like a lecture than a conversation or a discussion of policy issues. And in particular with the nomination of Judge Kavanaugh, he called it a corrupt bargain with the most extreme elements. And I thought that was interesting. Of course, he noted that he was going to vote against Trump's nominee before he was even nominated. So I think it's really disappointing to have a senator that's going to take a position on a judge candidate based on certain factors that before he even knows
It really is, and Rebecca, obviously the senator has never met a member of the Federalist Society,
right?
Because they're a bunch of legal nerds. They're a bunch of very transparent, straightforward, sincere people who are learned in the law, and that it actually their whole group started as a reaction to the liberal takeover of the law schools and the legal community. So it's like a debating society. And so the idea that these are bad people who have views that are somehow beyond the pale is preposterous. And then also, I mean, say what you will about Donald J. Trump. First of all, he won. Mm-hmm. Second of all, he ran promising good judges, and that he even provided a list of the kinds of people, this bunch of specific folks, you can take a look at them, make an assessment of them, see what you think. That list of potential judicial nominees was validated by the American people at the ballot box.
Exactly. It was put out before the election, and there were a lot of people who made a decision in the election based on that list and based on who they believed strongly was going to be nominated to our nation's highest court. That was a really important issue for a lot of people during that election. So you're absolutely right. The American people spoke, and to just outright dismiss a nominee, no matter who he was, I think it does a service to the American people who elected the president.
Yeah, well, so this is just where we are, and this is some of the foolishness that we have to put up with, what passes for you know, our public conversation these days. But at the very least, you know, we can, you know, put up a few of these balloons and knock them down and sort of clarify the record. And again, as we always say to the listeners, this is part of an ongoing conversation. And that people need to choose to live life with their brains turned on.
Yes.
You know, that representative self-government is not a spectator sport. We need people to choose to be involved, to know who their elected officials are. You know,
ask questions, understand the issues. Absolutely. That's really important.
Amen to that. Well, we're winding down here. Rebecca, thank you for being on the program. I look forward to many, many more programs in the future. But for now, tell the listeners, where can they go to learn more about you and NFIB and the things that you're doing?
Sure. They can go to www.nfib.com/PA.
Outstanding. And as ever, people can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network at 8:30 Sunday mornings with PMA Perspective. So from Rebecca and me, thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. In politics, everything is relative. What the mainstream media and left-wing activists term the far right at one time was the sensible center. For example, cutting tax rates to allow the private sector economy to flourish was once done by President John F. Kennedy. It was none other than President Bill Clinton who told Congress, "The era of big government is over." Both ideas today are considered to be far-right positions. It is not that the inherent sensibility of such policies have changed. Rather, it is the fact the Democrat Party has marched steadily leftward, so much so that even the once extreme politics of George McGovern today would be considered too conservative for most Democrats. The Democrats' march to the extreme left accelerated under the presidency of Barack Obama, whose political ideology was informed by the noted communist Frank Marshall Davis. Davis advocated, among other statist policies, universal health care, which became the template for the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. Barack Obama would have been a transformative president had not he enacted most of his socialistic policies via executive order rather than by legislation. The election of Donald J. Trump as his successor allowed many of those policies to be reversed. That Hillary Clinton would not be chief executive and able to make the Obama policies a permanent part of the national fabric gave rise to the wave of outrage that has swept through the American left. That outrage has fueled the Democrat Party's plunge into the abyss of socialism. The millennial generation, which was not witness to the atrocities wrought by totalitarian regimes and who have not been taught the lessons of history by our public education system, seem especially susceptible to socialistic promises of free college education and so-called universal basic incomes. And so it was that a millennial, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stunned the Democrat Party establishment by defeating Congressman Joseph Crowley in the recent New York primary. Ocasio-Cortez ran as an avowed socialist and, since her victory, has sought to portray herself as the face of the party's future. Congressman Crowley was seen as the most likely successor to House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, who has been both legislatively and politically ineffective. Crowley's defeat sent shockwaves through the party's establishment, which now fears the radical socialism of candidates like Ocasio-Cortez will upend its chances of reclaiming a House majority this November. Another example of how far the party has strayed from the mainstream was seen recently in California, where U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein was deemed insufficiently liberal by party activists. State Senator Kevin De Leon easily defeated her for the party's endorsement. That vote was propelled by so-called progressive activists who have accomplished the improbable task of moving the California Democrat Party even further to the left. Here in Pennsylvania, the Costa family is an Allegheny County institution. Senator Jay Costa serves as minority leader in the state Senate. His two cousins, Dom and Paul, represent state House districts. In last May's primary, Dom and Paul were defeated by challengers who had the backing of the Democratic Socialists of America. Likewise, Democrat Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack was defeated in his bid for renomination by the extreme left-wing mayor of Braddock, John Fetterman. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported that Sanders told the assembled activists that Fetterman would, quote, help usher in the democratic socialist agenda that he, Sanders, has been revolutionizing, end quote. Fetterman is now the running mate of incumbent Governor Tom Wolf. The Huffington Post has dubbed Wolf the most liberal governor in America, meaning state Democrats are running the most extreme left-wing ticket they have ever nominated. All this is playing out against the backdrop of a surging U.S. economy made possible by the pro-growth economic policies of the Trump administration, which include tax cuts and a rollback of the regulatory excesses of the Obama years. With unemployment near record lows and Americans having more disposable income, the socialist agenda becomes less attractive to the middle of the political spectrum. And so Democrats find themselves captive of their party's most extremist elements, precisely at a time the folly of their agenda is becoming more and more apparent to voters. Conservatives' belief in equality of opportunity is proving to be successful. This makes the left's warm embrace of socialistic policies an electoral minefield for Democrats as the November elections approach. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WKFB-AM in Gannett, WJAS-AM in Pittsburgh, along with WHKS-FM in Port Allegheny, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.